Okay, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of Innovations in Education, eCampus News podcast, where we explore the innovations and challenges shaping higher education today. I'm your host, Kevin Hogan. In today's rapidly evolving educational landscape, institutions are constantly seeking new ways to meet the needs of students and employers alike. One approach gaining significant traction is micro-credentials, shorter, focused learning experiences that certify specific skills or knowledge. This month, I'm joined by Dr. Stephen Bao, an experienced educational administrator and thought leader who does great work for us here at eCampus News, to discuss the growing role of micro-credentials in higher education. In this conversation, we explore how these credentials differ from traditional degrees. We examine implementation challenges and consider their potential impact on lifelong learning. From quality control concerns to transcript integration, from industry partnerships to faculty buy-in, we'll dive deep into the practical realities of bringing micro-credentials into the academic mainstream. Have a listen, and I hope you enjoy it. Okay, Steve, as always, great to see you, at least on Zoom, if not in person, and appreciate you taking the time to share your ideas and insights with us today at eCampus.
My pleasure, Kevin. And, you know, as I said, it's such a quiet time right now in the education world that, you know, there's really nothing going on. So I don't know what we're going to talk about.
Exactly. Well, maybe this topic, anybody, maybe away from some of the madness and some of the more traditional things and kind of maybe some glass half full about the progress and the evolution of providing quality education to this generation of students. I don't know if they're Generation Alpha now, or are they still Generation Z, or whoever they are, but maybe we'll just kind of get started and get right into the weeds and talking about micro-credentials and their impact on students today. I mean, how would you define micro-credentials and how do they differ from a traditional degree or, to say, a certificate that you would get in higher education?
That seems to be the $64 question right now. What actually is a micro-credential, right? You can go to places like Coursera or some of the other tools that provide badges, and you can get a credential for going to a one-credit workshop or a one-hour workshop, right? And so that's one of the big things higher ed is trying to figure out, I think, is how do you scope these things?
Yeah.
And it's funny that I manage the curriculum committee for the graduate level on my campus, and I meet with the registrar folks and the sociology professor who manages the bigger piece, right? He does all the undergraduate curriculum stuff. And so I asked him, anticipating this meeting, and I said, so, you know, Craig, what do you think about micro-credentials? And he goes, I'm going to wait 5 years and see what the new trend is then. In higher ed, I think faculty haven't totally engaged yet with micro-credentials. Some universities have, but I think you see more people who are looking at micro-credentials right now are the folks who are gazing out, not the people who are looking within the institution. Does that make sense?
But what are the primary drivers do you see behind this growing interest for the ones that are looking out?
Well, I think that the biggest key is higher ed is trying to deal with all the enrollment issues they're trying to address, right? Where we're going to see increased enrollment, at least for a while, is we look at traditional undergraduate numbers are going down. I would suspect maybe international student numbers are going to go down for a while. So graduate students and postgraduate folks, and especially as we live in this maybe wildly fluid world right now, and there's such a need for potential retooling as, you know, generative AI takes off and all those sort of things, there's a potential to say, hey, I need a credential that addresses this particular issue. And so I think that you see that lifelong learning piece and how universities can provide that is really important. One of my colleagues sent me something a couple of weeks ago that articulated that 97% of K-12 superintendents don't look to higher ed for guidance from AI or about AI. And so I think that micro-credentials are potentially a way for us to become more of a player in that non-degree instruction too.
Yeah. Now, are there particular industries or professional fields that you think have been most receptive to this? I mean, you can think about some majors and topics, like engineering, for example, where you traditionally would have a postgraduate certificate that you get in a particular aspect. Talk about that, where you see those things maybe having a better advantage than, say, I don't know, English or...
Right. I'm not going to go get a micro-credential in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Right. Well, first, that'd be a degree anywhere in Shakespeare, but maybe in Dante, you could get a credential, right? But I think if you look at like tech, everything from cybersecurity, data analysis, all of those kind of pieces, networking even, would be places where you could see you'd be looking for certification and micro-credentials that would help you up over time.
Yeah.
You know, healthcare is another area. I think especially with all of the changes to telehealth and the generative AI use, you know, my wife's a nurse practitioner, and they're working, you know, on how can AI do some of their triage. So somebody has to set those parameters and all that sort of stuff.
Sure. Now, in terms of from an administrator who's looking to kind of stitch this into whatever the traditional curriculum is, I mean, how do you recommend, I don't know, even the pricing or the financial model? I mean, is this something that's going to be part and parcel of an overall degree? Is it a whole different channel? I mean, you saw during COVID and a lot of higher ed kind of start offering these remote services and degrees, and especially some of the, I would say, you know, the higher branded ones, where it's like, oh, well, now I can get my fact-checking degree from NYU. And it's like, well, you are, but you're not. And now that we've kind of gone back to normal, I think I see a lot of those things quietly, or not so quietly, disappearing as offerings. But it does seem like it is something that should be baked into most higher education's setups. But how do you see it being set up?
Well, and that seems to be, that's the struggle right now, right? Is how do you do it?
Yeah.
Right? Because only since like the 1890s, we've been using Carnegie units for everything.
Right.
Carnegie units is how we identify students, you know, and what they learned. It's how they pay their tuition is based on Carnegie units. You know, my workload is based on Carnegie units. So when you look at all those things, anything that differs from that Carnegie unit is, okay, how do we deal with that? The university administrators are going to have to say, okay, how can we make this work in conjunction with the faculty? What's reasonable?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so I think that it's probably going to be yes and, right? I think you'll see some standalone micro-certificates for a variety of things. Like, for instance, in my licensing program, right, which is all postmaster's students, Minnesota's requirements are different than most other states. In fact, they're generally quite more advanced than a lot of other states as far as the amount required to get licensed as a principal. And there are a couple of things that Minnesota requires, like collective bargaining instruction, that most states don't require. So it'd be great to do a micro-credential that could be on demand for students who could meet that need exactly when they come into the state and then get their Minnesota license, right? That's not always possible, but credentialing being more of an on-demand that can be picked up at whim and then potentially stitched into a course is more effective, I think, than if the micro-credential is going to be scheduled just like any other course.
Yeah. One of the other hesitations that I hear when it comes to micro-credentialing is ensuring the quality control and an academic rigor, right, within the offerings. Talk a little bit about how you do that.
Well, I think the key, and we're still trying to figure that out, but the issue is, what is the scope of the smallest piece of micro-credential, right? Is it that one-hour course, meaning one actual clock hour, not a Carnegie unit? Like, or do they have to at least be like a one Carnegie unit kind of credit, or are we going to go away from that and just do something else? Or gosh, just move to standards, right? If you can do these things, it's okay. It doesn't take care if you take 3 hours or 30 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But that would be a big change for higher ed.
Right.
And then do those stack within courses? So we also have a pilot along with some of the Google certification that's available, where we have the ability to have students use those Google certifications now within our coursework. And so the question becomes, so they not only get credit for us, but they could also potentially get a Google micro-credential that they can put on their LinkedIn page. And then the other question is, how does it show up on their transcript?
Mm-hmm.
right? Because transcripts are obviously a big deal for us. That is what we use as a coin of the realm, right? That's our version of Bitcoin.
That's the ultimate.
Yeah. So how do they show up, and how do they show up in a way that, you know, right now when I get transcripts from a student trying to transfer into our program, I can look and I know 3 credits is 3 credits, right?
Yeah.
More or less. And here's the scope. I see a syllabus. How is all that going to work for credentialing? And I think there's going to have to be some broader understanding for higher ed of, okay, this is what we're going to talk about. And that kind of goes against the flexibility of micro-credentialing that the IT environment and healthcare and, you know, finance are using. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Talk a little bit about where you see institutions that maybe, I don't know, have been talking a good game or kind of exploring the possibilities of it. Maybe, you know, they have the president or the provost. It's like, well, when are we going to get into this micro-credentialing game? What are you going to do? And then the responsibility is for them to kind of go out and begin to explore what these offerings are. Do you have a kind of a laundry list of next steps after they get off of this conversation and kind of dive into the whole idea?
Well, you know, in most universities that are pretty faculty driven, I think getting that faculty consensus of, okay, where are we going to start with this? You know, what to do? What's our focus? And as I said earlier, I think most of the initial focus should probably be external, you know, extension, adult continuing ed kind of things, or somebody who's already got a degree who needs to become more current on a topic, for instance, right? Like you could provide a micro-credential in school law, right? For the K-12 community, because obviously law changes constantly. And if I took my law degree 5-7 years ago, and now I'm finally deciding, hey, I'd like to go to a principal or to be a principalship somewhere else, it's a good time to say maybe, oh, let me go get a credential that shows I'm up to date on school law.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That would be an easy thing to do that could be in conjunction with, you know, a university and a law firm, for instance. But that first key is how are we going to do it? And then how are you going to generate a record of it? How's it going to fit on the transcript?
Yeah.
Because ultimately that's going to be the question that's really important. We can, you know, I could put anything on LinkedIn. I could say I went to whatever university, right? And put it on LinkedIn. Nobody's going to check it out probably.
Yeah.
But so that transcript still becomes important ultimately.
Right. It seems like the micro of micro-credentialing too could talk about maybe more of a regional influence, I would think, in terms of higher education. Like, can you talk about maybe some business partnerships that, I don't know, like say manufacturing, for instance, and you have a small regional college and you've got 3 major manufacturers in your area to set up something where it's like, hey, look, if you want to get a job with this local place, these are the sort of the things you put in place. Is that something that is a potential?
Absolutely. And, you know, there are high schools who've done that. You know, it's like, if here's the deal, right? When I was a superintendent, I'd get people from one of the local food production factories who'd be like, hey, we just need people to do this, this, and this. And if they can do that, we will hire them. They will start off with, you know, a decent wage and full benefits day one out of high school if they want. And it would be very easy. So for instance, in our relationship with Winona State and the Mayo Clinic, we want to hire new people. We want them to have this set of experiences already. And if they have those, you know, they'll go to the front of the line for hiring, right? And it's maybe something like, hey, here's HIPAA training.
Yeah, that seems like certainly a real world opportunity that's right there with the technology where it is. But so to kind of wrap things up, there was a time where there was a real sort of hype around micro-credentials, and now maybe because of the end of COVID and moving on and things going back to whatever normal you can define normal being.
I was going to say, I'm impressed if you can define normal, right?
Yeah. But where do you see, I mean, is this just even the topic as it evolves? Is it just going to be something that's going to revolutionize, or is it something that it's just going to kind of complement the current conditions of higher education?
I wish I was a good higher ed futurist, right? I'm not. But I would see, you know, if you look at examples like the University of Texas system has this statewide initiative on Texas credentials for the future, which are tied to both students and alumni, tied to workforce relevance, you know, accessibility. That's a good example. And that's a very complementary system.
Yeah.
Right. And I do think because of the speed of change, right? Every time we turn around, there's a new AI model out and it's doing more than it did. You know, I keep having to change and update everything. I used to say, hey, you want to make sure your stuff is AI resilient. Make sure they have to include both text and graphics because AI doesn't do that very well.
Yeah.
Well, that's not true anymore, right? And so how are you going to do it now? And so that ability to keep going back, that lifelong learning piece, I think potentially those micro credentials are a way to justify and show visibly what that lifelong learning is.
Yeah.
The SUNY system also, I think, is doing a pretty good job with micro credentials. They're another system that our Minnesota State system is looking to hook. How do we do that? You know, they're looking for things that stack. As you come into the course, if you do these credentials, then you're going to need less work to get your degree.
Well, as I said at the beginning, your ideas and insights are always really valuable to our readers and listeners. I think this is a topic that continues to need discussion that, you know, as you said, I mean, it's not like it's something that's in place, but there are some leaders out there that are doing it, including yourself. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, you're welcome. There are a lot of good IT badging programs out in K-12 and in even some public libraries that I've seen who've done a good job of trying to provide those resources. And the next step is taking those credentials, figuring out how to gamify that so you can continue to show, hey, here's what I'm doing. Here's all the stuff I'm learning.
And that's all we have for this month's edition of Innovations in Education. I'm happy that you found us. I'm happy you clicked through to listen to this conversation and hope you subscribe at ecampusnews.com for other podcasts and a lot of great resources that we have up here to help you get your job done. Once again, I'm Kevin Hogan. Thanks for listening.